The debate over a new arena in Cincinnati continues to percolate, but this much seems clear. If and when a new arena gets built, the city's hockey team is expected to play there. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to dig into Cincinnati's hockey past and present are Cincinnati hockey historian Don Helbig, author of Cincinnati Hockey and Its History, Jerry Dowling, and Cincinnati Cyclones play-by-play announcer and public relations coordinator Rudy Hodgson. Thank you all for being here today.
Yeah, excited to talk about hockey.
Yeah. Can't go wrong talking about hockey. So, Don, the Bengals and Reds tend to get most of the sports headlines in town. Was there a defining moment that determined why Cincinnati doesn't have a major league hockey team?
Yeah, I think you would go back to 1972-73 range when the NHL was looking to expand, and Cincinnati was one of the three finalists for NHL expansion. Washington, Kansas City were the other two. And then Washington and Kansas City get awarded those franchises. The NHL tells Cincinnati, be patient, you're next. They didn't want to be patient because they'd already started construction on a new arena. So they cast their lot with the World Hockey Association with the Cincinnati Stingers. And that kind of ruffled feathers with the NHL establishment. So when, you know, expansion came up again, Cincinnati gets bypassed. Kansas City, a couple years later, they relocate, go to Colorado, now the New Jersey Devils. Had they not brought the World Hockey Association in, Kansas City would have moved to Cincinnati instead of Colorado, and we would have had the NHL here. So a lot of it had to do with just, there was a lot of animosity. The World Hockey Association, it drove up the salaries for the NHL teams and all that. So all those staunch NHL supporters, they weren't going to, you know, look at Cincinnati for a long time after that.
Yeah, well, fighting's part of hockey, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay. Well, Jerry, I count seven hockey teams that have played in Cincinnati over the years, including our current team, the Cincinnati Cyclones. Some of them were part of leagues that no longer even exist. Why do you think so many teams and leagues have come and gone over all these years?
That they had a hard time establishing a base of fans that come back all the time. Right now, the Cyclones are averaging 7,000 to 8,000 a game, and the Stingers were about that same level too. So that's been the core of fans here almost forever. They've had a couple of sellouts when they have big promotions and things like that, but that's the way it's been. And I think it's one of the reasons why the NHL will not consider them even now.
Because of just the number of fans.
And one of the problems now is they don't have a big enough arena. That's the excuse they're using. And you've got this big palace up in Columbus now, which is nothing but private suites and big concourses and you name it. The Coliseum here can't compete with that facility.
Yeah, those private suites, those make money, so that's why they want them. Don, let's talk about the Cincinnati Mohawks. I understand your dad was a season ticket holder. You grew up hearing all about them. How good was that team?
Well, they started out with the American Hockey League. They were there for 3 years. Very, you know, good teams, competitive teams, farm club of the Montreal Canadiens, and then they dropped down to the International Hockey League, where they just totally dominated. They won five consecutive Turner Cup championships. The final year, the sixth year, they also, you know, they finished first during the regular season, but got knocked out in the playoffs. But, you know, just my dad would always talk about just how dominant they were and how that also, you know, led to them not being successful at the box office because, you know, they'd win games, you know, 11-1, 9-2, things like that. It just, and they just kept winning and winning. And, you know, it got boring for the fans because they won so much, you know, but that was one of the problems they had. Didn't draw a lot of fans, ran into some financial problems and that. So, you know, the Mohawks went away, but because of my dad's interest in the Mohawks, you know, he was super excited when the Cincinnati Swords American Hockey League came about in 1971. And he, you know, he made sure that I was introduced to the sport and, you know, I fell in love with it then.
Wow.
The Mohawks dropped down one level, too, to survive. It went from the American League to the International League. And they were there, what, 6 years total?
Yeah,
between the two.
6 years.
There's also a minor league hockey team in the gardens in the annex played most of the time. The Mohawks played in the Midwest Amateur Hockey League, and they're a pretty good hockey team.
Yeah.
They played some of their more important games in the big building.
Yeah. Well, and Jerry, then we had the Mohawks that we just talked about. We had the Wings in the early 60s. Don just mentioned the Swords in the 1970s before the Stingers came along in 75. Jerry, what made the Stingers such a good team? They were a pretty good team, weren't they?
Well, a lot of the players, because they offered more money to some of the players to jump from the National Hockey League to the WHA. The Stingers were a pretty heavy loaded team from former NHL guys like John Macken, what's his name, John, guy from Boston.
That's Rick, okay.
Rick John, Dudley. John McKenzie was one of the guys that came.
John McKenzie, yeah. And a lot of these, I counted them out later on. There were 16 former Stingers played in the NHL at one time.
Wow.
So I think myself would have been a mid-level NHL team quality-wise.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about Cincinnati hockey history. Do you have hockey memories you'd like to share? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Don, what happened to the Stingers?
You know, one of the things that happened to them was actually before they played their first ever home game, and that was, there should have been a lot of excitement that Major League Hockey was coming to Cincinnati, but the Cincinnati Reds, that was the start of the Big Red Machine. A couple of nights before they had their home opener, the Reds won the World Series against Boston. So
tough to compete with that.
Front page of the Inquirer's parade and everything downtown. So very tough to compete against that. But also, you know, it was Paul Brown, Cincinnati Bengals then too, in the early mid-70s. Very good team. You know, they were the Pittsburgh Steelers in their way, away from, you know, probably being the best team in the AFC at that time. You know, they had Kenny Anderson, Isaac Curtis, all those kind of guys. So, you know, a lot of the media attention, and rightfully so, was on the Reds and the Bengals at that time. So they just never got off to the right start in terms of, you know, having that, I don't want to say lack of media support, but they were not the story in town because there were other things bigger happening at
that
time.
That's exactly right. They were right in the middle of the Big Red Machine carrier. And I have one perfect example is the day they hired Jacques Demers to be coach, the same day the Reds got Tom Seaver to pitch. That got all the publicity.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they always had the bad timing like that, and it was the same thing. You look years later, you know, down the line when the Cincinnati Cyclones of the IHL, you know, they announced their affiliation with the Florida Panthers that day, but that's the same day that the Reds fired Tony Perez as the manager, you know, so that was going to be the big story. So it just seemed like, you know, something always got in the way of them being the story, you know, with hockey.
And they're having a problem. Remember, now you got this, so many dollars in the sports market taken by the Bengals, the Reds, and your new soccer team here. They don't get any publicity. They're not even mentioned in the paper of their schedule. You have a hard time getting the NHL standings into the paper. So hockey is pretty much on the back burner here.
Yeah.
And I've tried and tried. We didn't get anything in the paper until Jim Schottelkai, wouldn't you put something about the National Hockey League in the paper?
Well, we've got a caller on the line. Hey, Brad, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. What would you like to talk about?
Yeah, first of all, I want to say that I'm stunned that you mentioned the Cincinnati Wings because that team never gets mentioned in Cincinnati hockey history. You always talk about the Mohawks or the Swords, but mentioning the Wings and why I wanted to mention that that's an important team is that we've had a couple father-son combinations play in Cincinnati. On the Wings, Mark Messier's father played on that team, and then, of course, Mark Messier would play later on with the Cincinnati Stingers. And then we had another combination with the Cincinnati Tigers. Now, I don't know the father's first name, but it was, I believe it was Matthew Abad. It might be
O'Ban, yeah. It was Norm O'Ban with the Tigers.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, but also there's another one too. Greg Hotham was a Tiger, and his son also played for the Cyclones in the ECHL.
Oh, there you go. So when I tell people these stories that you're telling, they're stunned. They have no idea that Cincinnati had such a rich hockey history. And also, there's one other. I'm going to try to stump you guys. It's going to be very difficult. But did you know that Jim Craig was drafted by the Cincinnati Stingers, and had he decided to go pro instead of college, he may have never played in the 1980 hockey game.
Yep, I remember that he was one of their draft picks. Another guy who ended up being the Cincinnati Mighty Ducks general manager, worked for Anaheim, David McNabb. He was also drafted by the Cincinnati Stingers out of college. But he told me, he said, as much as he wanted to sign with the Stingers, he couldn't because his dad was such a staunch NHL guy. Max McNabb, he'd been the general manager of like the New Jersey Devils. And he just said there's just no way for family reasons and that he could do that to his father and sign with the World Hockey Association.
Got to be able to keep peace during Thanksgiving dinner for sure. Well, Brad, thanks so much for calling. Thanks for those thoughts. We appreciate them. Rudy, at the risk of offending Tigers fans, I want to skip the Tigers. That team only played from 81 through 82 anyway. And I want to get to the Cincinnati Cyclones. Rudy, tell us the Cyclones' origin story.
Yeah, so they started in 1990. Of course, they bounced around from league to league, but they've found a home here in the ECHL, and it's been great to just kind of continue to learn more about Cincinnati's rich hockey history. And it was mentioned earlier, of course, you got some NHL greats, Hall of Famers like Mark Messier that have been here. But, you know, the Cyclones also boast quite a few players here at the ECHL level that have made their name stick out for the longest time. And we have one right now in Justin Vive. His father, Rick Vive, played for the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are our current ECHL affiliate or NHL affiliate. And it's just kind of great to see just how intertwined the hockey world is. It's kind of like the real world where it's a lot smaller than you think. And, it's been great to be here and be part of this organization. And even though, we are an ECHL organization, we try our best to really look up and try and operate as close to the NHL as we can, because a lot of these guys on the ice, they have dreams of going up to the NHL as well. So we have to make sure that we're putting our guys in good positions to succeed as well.
They're here to develop.
Yeah. Yeah. Don, you want to
add
that?
Yeah. Rudy, you mentioned Justin Vive. That's when I knew I was getting old, when I saw him play for the Cyclones, because I saw Rick Vive, his father, play in the World Hockey Association against the Cincinnati Stingers and saw him score one of his first professional goals. So that's when I knew I was getting old.
Justin Vive is the only player that's been around long enough to develop his own fans. Most of these guys are here for 1 or 2 years. Justin's been here at least, 6 years, 7 years, something like that?
Been a long time.
He's getting long in the tooth, and he's seldom on the ice anymore, but he's kind of a leader. Yeah. Every time there's a problem with David, with the referees, he's out there questioning because he's a team captain.
That's great. That's great. Well, Don, when the Cyclones originally played in the Cincinnati Gardens, which no longer exists, but when the Cyclones left Cincinnati Gardens to play at the what was then Riverfront Coliseum, mm-hmm. not now Heritage Bank Arena, that's when the Mighty Ducks came to town, right? Tell us about that.
They did. That created an opening because it was a unique situation where the Cyclones ownership group was purchasing the arena downtown. You still had local ownership of the Cincinnati Gardens with the Robinson family. And they, you know, even though the Cyclones were leaving, you know, they wanted to fill dates, you know, so they knew that hockey worked there. The Cyclones have been very successful at the gate there. So they began talking to different leagues about, you know, bringing a hockey team in. And an opportunity came about with the Baltimore Bandits in the American Hockey League, you know, weren't going to stay there. And they became available for sale. And, you know, they purchased the team and worked out an affiliation with Anaheim and came in. Now, I had 1 year off between working for the Cyclones and then going to the Mighty Ducks, but I was with the Carolina Monarchs, and different people from the American Hockey League were asking me, you know, would that work at the Gardens? And I said, yeah, it works at the Gardens, but you have an established fan base. They're moving downtown. You're going to split the fan base. You know, I don't know. One team's not going to survive. Now, it was stupid for the American Hockey League, and I was in the American Hockey, but it was stupid for the league to allow a second team to come into the same market. Because I think, you know, they just did a lot of damage, you know, between the fan bases. And it took time to rebuild it. And the Cyclones have done it the right way, you know, the current Cyclones, to rebuild the damage that had been created back then.
Yeah. Jerry, hockey happened that time when both teams were here. Between the two teams, I wound up going to 66 games that year.
Oh, my goodness. Well, so, Jerry, how good were the Ducks?
I can't remember.
you can be honest. We didn't have a lot of good teams until near the end. You know, we had a couple years.
Some of their players. Bob Wren was a good player, and they had a couple of players I didn't think were very good. There were a couple of their goalies. Won't mention their names, but
No, they had. It was one of those situations where Anaheim was the parent club expansion team. You know, if they had draft picks that were pretty good right off the bat, you know, they didn't have a strong lineup up at the NHL level. So those guys played there instead of being where they should have been in the American Hockey League. So it took until, you know, they were here for eight seasons. So it almost took until that seventh, eighth year before they really, you know, had some good teams on the ice and were able to have players for the full year because Anaheim, you know, now had a pretty good team and didn't need to be calling guys up, you know, left and right and just trying to get the right combinations. So, but a lot of great players came through. A lot of, you know, you talked about Mark Messier, you know, with the Stingers. You had Ryan Getzlaf started his pro career with the Cincinnati Mighty Ducks. You had Joffrey Lupo played a long time in the NHL. John Sebastian Jagr, Corey Perry, still in the NHL today. So there was a lot of guys that, you know, some are going to be in the Hall of Fame. Some had just, you know, not just a cup of coffee, but, you know, really long and successful careers where they were important players for their teams in the National Hockey League that came from the Cincinnati Mighty Ducks.
Well, the Ducks' last season here was in 2005, and then the team was sold and moved to Illinois. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Rockford Ice Hogs. Yeah, Ice Hogs. That's what it is. Yeah, they moved to Rockford, and you know, I don't think many people would know that's the same Cincinnati Mighty Ducks franchise, but it was just it was unfortunate because that was the year where there wasn't two teams that final year. Anaheim had a problem with you know, Louisville, Lexington had left the American Hockey League, so Cincinnati was kind of an outpost city now. There was a lot more, you know, three games and three nights, a lot harder travel on the players, not enough practice time. So they needed to get into a situation with their affiliate where it was going to be better for player development than Cincinnati was. They had no problem with the ownership of the building or anything. It just, for hockey purposes, Portland, Oregon made more sense. And that left Cincinnati without an affiliate. And that's how the Mighty Ducks ended.
Yeah. Well, Rudy, we've talked about how the Cyclones are part of the ECHL, which is a AA developmental hockey league. What does that mean for fans in terms of the quality of play that they see on the ice?
I think quality is pretty good if you accept the fact that they're a minor league team. They're developing players, and to me, it's pretty good hockey.
Okay. What do you think, Rudy?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's one of the most common misconceptions when it comes to the ECHL and the Cincinnati Cyclones is, well, they're not the NHL, so the product can't possibly be good. But like Don mentioned, just the names that have come up through Cincinnati, and even now you have players that are incredible. I mean, we had Ken Appleby here for a couple months to start the season. He's an NHL goaltender that's trying to find his way back up to the National Hockey League. And now he's up in the American League with the Marlies. So I think the product is fantastic. And I think a lot of people forget that hockey is very similar to baseball, where unless you are an anomaly like a Connor Bedard or a Sidney Crosby or a Connor McDavid, you're not going to see the NHL until you have a couple years under your belt. It's a very physical, it's a grown man game. And so you need a couple years in the ECHL. You need a couple years in the American League to really find yourself as a player. And the Cyclones, because of our affiliation with the Maple Leafs, we provide those opportunities to players that are pretty young. So you see flashes of brilliance and you see some plays where it's like, wow, this guy is really, really good. But then you also get the lifers like Justin and guys like Lincoln Griffin who their identities are made here in the ECHL, and they had aspirations, perhaps bounced up and down between this league and the AHL, but they still produce and make it a really fun, high quality product for fans to see. And I always say there's nothing quite like watching a hockey game live. As much as I want you to tune in and listen to my voice and watch the games, I always implore people to come watch games in person because you don't really understand the speed of the sport until you're there witnessing it in real time.
The best place to watch a hockey game is at center ice about halfway up. And you can see both ends. You can see all the players develop. You can see some of the stuff that's behind where the cameras go.
Okay.
You know, back in the day when the Cyclones first started in the ECHL in 1990, I mean, I would say 99% of the players in that league, if they wanted to see an NHL game, the only way they were going to do that was to buy a ticket. Nowadays, there is such a fine line between the NHL, the American Hockey League, the ECHL, and some of it is, you know, just where you were drafted, you know, that you don't get the chances that someone else might, you know, continually get. But there's not a great deal of – if you go to a game now, you're not going to see a great deal of difference in the caliber of play with the Cyclones than what you saw in the American Hockey League or even, you know, in the IHL days with the Cyclones. I mean, the players are bigger, they're stronger, they're faster, better athletes than ever before, and it shows on the ice.
Yeah. Well, Rudy, I want to ask you about this. You know, the owners of Heritage Bank Arena invested in a new LED scoreboard there. The team also has a new head coach who's a former Cyclones player. What does all that translate to for the fans?
Absolutely. I think it's no question, no secret what's being said about the future of Cincinnati hockey. But our home is Heritage Bank Center, and we proudly call it home, right? As far as the investment into the scoreboard, we're also making investments into our practice facility. And it's all the little things that the organization is trying to do to make it a high quality product so that it also reflects off the ice and on the ice for our players and for our fans. And I think grassroots looks different. There's no recipe to making the game grow in any market, but the way the Cyclones have approached it is through their youth organization, the Junior Cyclones, and investing in the community, investing in its people. That's the way you stick around. That's the way you grow the game. And, you know, being from Los Angeles, I saw it firsthand with the Kings. It's when you invest in the people as opposed to the property, it's a really, really good way for people to really care about the product that you're putting out there. So as far as Coach Wozlowski is concerned, he's a great coach. I mean, he played for the organization. He has already kind of laid the groundwork as far as turning the team around. We're currently in a playoff spot. Only a few points separate us from the top of the division. It's about playing Cyclones hockey and reestablishing what that means to this new era of the game. So it's been great to work with Riley. It's been great to see what the Cyclones are doing around the community. It's one of the things that drew me to being a part of this organization, really, is seeing how much they care about growing the sport as best as they can, knowing that they're not an NHL organization and knowing that they do get the help from the Maple Leafs as well.
Yeah. You know, we started talking about all this discussion about building a new arena, where it should go. It seems like the community expects the Cyclones to be an anchor tenant there. Don, where would you like to see the new arena built?
If they were to build a new arena, I still think it needs to be, you know, downtown. It's kind of hard now because I think it should have gone. It's now FC Cincinnati with with their stadium there. So that's where I would have gone with it. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know that maybe the same spot that you have, or maybe it's just doing what the Seattle Kraken did and just refurbishing what you have, you know, to make it that level. You know, they were able to do it. And so maybe that's the answer. And you would save a lot of money there if you were to just take the current arena and just kind of make all the upgrades that you have to do there. And like I said, it's been done elsewhere. You know, why not Cincinnati?
One of the things that I see they've been discussed is putting a cantilever over the road to make the stadium bigger.
Yeah.
I don't know how that would work, but that would still be using the old building.
At least the old site.
It needs a lot of renovation as it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have been talking with Cincinnati hockey historian Don Helbig, author of Cincinnati Hockey and Its History, Jerry Dowling, and Cincinnati Cyclones play-by-play announcer and public relations coordinator, Rudy Hodgins. Thank you all so much for your time today and for this hockey education. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. And if you miss us live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.